At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest episode, latest chapter, latest great adventure of Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Good morning, Ms. Jones.
Good morning, Mr. Parry. How are we doing today?
Doing very well today, indeed, thank you. There's one issue I've got to bring up before we get going on this marvellous chapter from Planet Porky, a rock chick writer extraordinaire, the decadence of the life that you've led, Miss Jones, the people that you've known, the rock stars you've mixed with, the shenanigans you've got yourself into, and it all ends up, as you start to grow older and get a bit more mature, with you taking a position in the church. Please tell all.
Well, it sounds like this has just been sprung on me, doesn't it, at the last minute? But actually, as you well know, I've been involved with St. Bride's Church on Fleet Street, the journalist church,
yes,
as we've all known and loved it for many, many years, decades in some cases.
Yeah.
I've been involved there for 34 years. Mm. And recently I was asked to stand as a church warden, which was a huge surprise,
yeah.
A very great honour, and I have accepted the position.
Yeah.
So when you wander into your next memorial service at St. Bride's, you may well see me sort of gowned at the back, showing people to their seats and so on.
Handing out the running order and all that kind of stuff, yeah? The service order, yeah?
That is actually what the Guild of St. Bride is responsible for. So the Guild, which are all the men and ladies nowadays in brown coats,
yeah.
who sort of organise the service,
yes.
And help the clergy to make things run smoothly. That's really the job, yeah.
That's great. So you take this as a great honour, do you?
Absolutely. Yes.
But, I mean, without demeaning it, and, you know, I know that you're a lady of faith, if it's just handing out a few hymn books with a black cloak on, is that not something anybody could do, really?
Well, that isn't the job of a church warden, of course. That's really what the ushers do. We all sort of have interchangeable roles
right. Before
and during services. But the parts that the public don't see, and people who are involved in their local churches will know about this. There's a lot of organisation, many, many meetings, charity things that need to be sorted out, lots of paperwork, lots of things that need to be approved, committees that we all have to sit on.
Yep.
So there's, you know, the tip of the iceberg is what you see when you wander into a church.
Sure, sure.
It's what goes on backstage, as in any organisation.
No, but, I appreciate that. And I admire you enormously. I want to thank you on behalf of the journalistic community for giving your time freely to keep an organisation like St. Bride's going. I think the number of memorial services are sort of declining, aren't they, Leslie? I used to go to one or two a year, you know, because as you get older, your friends all die because they've drunk too much during their lives. I haven't been to one for quite a while. I suppose that's obviously a lot to do with COVID, but I can't remember going to many before that. I think the last one I went to was from Cheshire. Jimmy, he was a big friend of Hugh McIlvany. And would have been a friend of your father's.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I can't either. But anyway,
in normal circumstances, we have dozens of these things a year. But all throughout 2020, there were none. The same as we had no weddings, no funerals, no baptisms, you know, because services were shut down for most of the year.
Sure.
So there are, I think we've got about a year's worth in the bag, as it were, that we still have to catch up with.
Yes.
So I think that the coming year, provided COVID doesn't kick in again, I think is going to be a very busy year for the church. And of course, at Christmas time, we have a whole season of special Christmas services, which all the newspapers have their own service, which they pay for.
Yeah.
And to which they invite their staff and so on. And then there's a journalist's carol service, which you all have been to many times.
Yeah.
And those services last over the course of about 6 weeks. So Christmas is always a very busy time.
Oh, very busy indeed. And very busy time for the bars around St. Bride's, of course, because us being journalists, the whole point really of having a memorial service for a pal is one, to pay tribute to them, which usually takes about an hour and 10 minutes, and then 6 hours in the pub afterwards, yes?
Absolutely, and yeah. Why not?
Yeah,
you know, as in life, so in death.
Yes, absolutely. But the person we're paying tribute to would be mortally upset if everybody just suddenly walked away from the service at the end and didn't go and get bladderated. But anyway...
well, it's expected, isn't it? So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a few coming up in the year to come that you'll be able to come in and join in with, and we'll have some fun afterwards.
Oh, indeed. Jimmy Lawton I'm talking about, of course.
James That's Lawton. Right. Yes, of course.
And lovely man. I worked with Jimmy for years. He was on the Express. When I got there, I was a young kid. He was a very seasoned operator, you know, a man of mass who held the respect of his whole group of sports journalists. Travelled around the world, Olympic Games and all that. I think the last job I did on the road with Jimmy was the 1996 Atlanta Olympic Games in Atlanta. Very hot place, Atlanta. After that, I wasn't on the road anymore, and I was, you know, doing other things. But anyway, there we are. Now, talking about things internationally, Miss Jones, I have to say I am mad, fuming, angry about the Eurovision Song Contest, and I put out a message on Twitter in the last 12 hours saying we must pull out now. We've got to pull out because we are continually humiliated by these people in Europe who just give us no point. Just because we are the United Kingdom, we're an island off the continent, we're not continental, you know, there are allegations that Brexit has got into politicising the whole event. And what's the point of joining in a tournament like that when we get bashed in the face, given no points, when we are the leading music nation in the world?
I hear your anger. Did you watch the competition?
No, I refused to watch it because I knew it was going to happen.
Well, you predicted correctly. The thing is, this competition was launched in 1956. So that's, what, 65 years ago or something.
Yep.
I think they've all lost sight of the fact that this competition is about songs. Our particular song in this contest was very strong, but all the other countries delivered scantily clad women, a lot of flesh flashing, OTT sets, special effects. It was all a bit 70s and 80s, and they lost sight of the fact that it's about the song. And the song that won it, which was Italy's contribution, was really very 70s and boring. If you closed your eyes and stripped away all the special effects and all the costumes and all of that, really, you were left with not very much song. And I have to ask, how many of these sort of Euro trash bands and singers have gone on to international stardom? I would say you could count them on the fingers of one hand. Whereas we, on the other hand, have delivered the world their rock and pop content.
That's right.
And I think there is resentment towards Britain for us having done this.
Yes.
So the Eurovision Song Contest is the one time in the year when they can get their own back and they can go, right, okay, you know, you do it throughout the rest of the year, but we, on this night, we dominate and it's what we say that goes. I think that's all it is. It's sour grapes. Mm. And I'm afraid Europe is very good at sour grapes.
Yes, no, I totally agree. Obviously, the one exception is ABBA. And yet, to my shame, I've suddenly discovered that when ABBA won in Brighton, in whatever year it was, 1973 or something, we gave them no point. How could you give Waterloo, you know, one of the great pop songs of all time, no points? And particularly when the group delivering it, who were unknown at the time, were so glamorous, you know, two beautiful girl singers, two wacky musicians, one on a piano, one on a guitar. I think that was a horrendous thing. I'm ashamed to be British to learn that we gave ABBA zero.
Well, no, you're not. Because if you watch the footage of that particular entry during that particular year, you know, Benny and Bjorn are pretty ugly. They don't look like pop stars. It wasn't
I couldn't say that about the girl singers, by the way, without getting lambasted worldwide for sexism.
Well, I'm only speaking my mind. Agnetha and Annie Fried did. They looked attractive, but they didn't look sexy. You know, Agnetha was wearing a sort of blue blouson and these kind of plus eight kind of trousers tucked into silver boots. And yeah, Annie Freed was, yeah. She looked a bit like a folk singer with all the bubbly hair and the long skirt and stuff. They didn't look like obvious pop stars at the time. And I think our opinion of ABBA is now clouded and enhanced, so both of those things, by the fact of their huge subsequent stardom. But on the night, they didn't look like Eurovision winners.
Well, that's amazing, because the song itself, if I hadn't seen the group playing it, the song itself, we know it starts with that piano, boom, boom, and when, where was it? Napoleon did surrender. Oh, yeah, yeah, bum, bum. And so, you know, it's just a lovely sound, I thought. But I was...
Yeah, but I think it's gained in popularity. Its mythology has made it a massive hit.
Yes, that's right.
At the time, it wasn't an obvious Eurovision winner.
Yeah, no. When it happened, by the way, I remember that somebody did a survey, you know, amongst teenagers at the time of, you know, what did you think of the song that won? And they all thought it was about a railway station in London. Nobody had ever, you know, these kids, you know, sort of 15 then, had not been taught, you know, English history, didn't know Waterloo was one of the most famous battles in the history of Britain. But anyway, there we go. I got rebuked by a lot of people saying, oh, what do you mean Europe's never produced any great singers? I said, no, I accept ABBA. But then somebody said, you've forgotten A-ha. And I had to sort of look it up to find out. It was some guy called Mortensen or somebody?
Morten Harket. They were a Norwegian band. But the thing is, A-ha never entered the Eurovision Song Contest.
No, I said that Europe have never produced any great groups ever.
Yeah, we've had a few. But, I mean, it doesn't compare to what the UK has produced or America
not.
Come to that.
Of course
Australia has delivered its fair share.
Yes. You know,
I think there was a time when we could put our big stars, like we even put Olivia Newton-John into the Eurovision Song Contest. Took Cliff Richard to sing our entry.
Lulu, by the way, Lulu.
Yes, and those were big pop stars in their own right at the time, but we've stopped doing that. Yeah. I think Katrina and the Waves was the last time we did that, and of course they won it.
Yeah.
That was back in the 90s. Yeah. But I think a lot of stars wouldn't take the risk on the hit on their career now. So if they were invited, say somebody invited Paul McCartney, I don't know, Paul McCartney or Adele or somebody to go and be in the Eurovision Song Contest, they'd laugh them out of the room because they wouldn't want to take the risk of the hit on their career, of the ridicule, because we're going to come last. And I feel that this competition has had its day. If they want to be like this, like children in a playground, leave them to it. We put a lot of money into this contest.
I think we
should now walk away from it and say, right, done. Yeah. You're obviously ridiculing us for whatever your petty little reasons are. So off you go, have a nice contest, and we'll see you in another life.
I totally agree. And I think the BBC are one of the main contributors, you know, through the European Broadcasting Organization or something, and yet we get slapped in the face. Talking about the BBC, of course, Miss Jones, what have you made of the massive extensive coverage over the last couple of days of the Bashir situation? My God, if a man ever, you know, brought the wrath of the gods down upon him for an act of journalism, it is Martin Bashir, isn't it?
Well, do you know, I was on a bus yesterday coming along Fleet Street after coming out of church.
Oh, how lovely.
And yeah, I just came past King's College London, you know, at the top of the Strand there.
Aldrich.
Just before you go, just before you go left across the bridge.
Yeah.
And they've got all these huge photographs along the outside of University College of people who lecture at the college. And Martin Bashir's image is huge.
You're
there.
Joking.
And I sat there thinking they might want to take that one down.
Yes.
I think it was always coming. Yeah. We know what he did. He disgraced himself. He lied. He got documents forged. Diana was coerced into an interview that she was ill-advised to give.
Yeah.
And it probably did, as Prince William has suggested, have some impact on the rest of her life and how she died, because she perhaps made choices after the outrage of this interview that she might not have made that led her down the slippery slope to her death. You could see the pain in William. Did you watch that?
Oh, absolutely.
The little statement. And it's so rare, by the way, for a royal to stand up and give a statement to camera. Normally, they make a statement in writing and it's read out on the news. But he gave this to camera and it was heartrending, wasn't it?
It was.
And also Harry's statement as well. I mean, those people forget it's their mother.
Yes.
They had to walk behind her coffin for a couple of miles, whatever the distance was. And that, the pain of that, the the hideousness of the world's eyes on them as they had to walk along behind their mother's body. Yeah. I think none of us can ever appreciate how horrible that was for them.
And they've
had to live with this for 25 years. So whatever Bashir has got coming to him, yeah. I'm afraid to say he deserves it because he did this.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. There's something very, very odd in the background here, you know, because I don't know if you picked up on some of the side stories, but one of them is there's a guy called Weisler, and Weisler was the graphic artist who was asked to put together the fake bank accounts for Martin Bashir. And Weisler's totally innocent. You know what it's like in our business? If some huge, you know, sort of famous person comes along and says, oh, could you do this for me? You don't question them. You just do it, don't you? You know?
I think people are asking questions about that. But the fact is the BBC produces dramas as well as documentaries and everything else.
Yeah.
He could have been making bank documents to be used in a drama, a police drama or something like that. He wasn't told what the commission was for.
That's right. This
guy has been hung out to dry. It's disgraceful.
Well, and he's speaking publicly now. But 2 months after he did that, his flat was broken into in London. I think it was Earl's Court or somewhere like that. And the only thing that was stolen were two what we used to then call floppy disks with the contents of the fake documents on them. They didn't steal anything else from his flat. They didn't take any money or valuables or, you know, they didn't trash the place. They just went straight to wherever the disks were, took them and stole them and never been seen again. Isn't that odd?
Well, that it is interesting. It's very odd, but may I just play devil's advocate and say, what evidence do we have that that happened?
Well, the police investigated a break-in. No, the police investigated a break-in. And there's no question that there was a break-in. And he reported them and the police came round and all that. But it was so odd that there were no... The other amazing...
But I know about the police going round there.
Yeah.
But I'm just playing devil's advocate. How do we know that it actually happened? Other than, I'm not doubting Matt, but I'm just saying...
Yeah.
Could it all have been part of the conspiracy that, you know, this break-in was arranged, then he had to report the discs were stolen, the police do an investigation? I'm just saying, you know, anything can happen in this scenario.
Well, it can, but I don't want to cast any aspersions upon that. I've seen him talking as well. You saw William talking. And there's a man who's pained, whose life was just destroyed by it because he was employed by the BBC as a subcontractor and he subsequently lost his business because nobody would then deal with him. It was shocking. But the other...
He's going to sue for loss of earnings, isn't he?
I think so.
He damn well should go for millions.
Yeah, I totally agree. But the other even more amazing story about Mr. Weisler is... He was in a rowing boat on the River Thames at Hampton Court. Now, I don't know if you've ever been down there, but I love that place.
It's very pretty, isn't it?
It's very pretty. River runs alongside Hampton Court. You can go down, a path and hire a rowing boat and row on the river. And I've done that a number of times with young ladies who've, you know, wanted to be close to me. You know what I mean?
It always comes down to that, doesn't
it? Well, it always reminds me of the scene in the John Lennon Yoko Ono video. Had to get John Lennon in, folks, because this is like on Planet Porky. You know, it always reminds me of the scene in that video where John Lennon is failingly trying to row Yoko Ono on the lake in their home in Surrey. But
It's Tittenhurst Park, yeah.
Tittenhurst Park, good, yeah. Well done, yeah.
There are heads going to roll here. I mean, you saw Tony Hall resigned from his National Gallery post yesterday. So Tony Hall was the Director General of the BBC at the time of this scandal.
Yeah.
So he would have ordered the investigation. But what we know now is that there was a huge cover-up and probably several cover-ups, one on top of the other. And Bashir is protesting his innocence in the Sunday Times this weekend, saying how much his family loved Diana.
Yeah.
They would never have done anything to hurt her.
Yeah.
What if they loved her that much? Mm. Wouldn't have done the interview in the first place.
Wouldn't have deceived her. Anyway, to get just to the end of the story, sorry, about this rowing boat, okay. And guys, he's rowing on the River Thames when all of a sudden one of his kids points out that there's a man on the riverbank on the other side who appears to be walking into the water with an intention that looks like he might be trying to kill himself. So guy looks over, sees this bloke walk in. He was a very well-dressed Asian man, and without any emotion, he walked into the water until the water had gone over his head. And Geyser jumped out of the boat and got the bloke and then doggy paddled him back to the shore and then gave him the Heimlich manoeuvre, to get the water out of his lungs. The guy coughed and started breathing again. And when he said, are you all right? Yeah. And he said, and you won't believe this, but the guy could barely speak. But Geisler went into his pockets to try and get an identity for him, saw his surname was Bashir, and eventually established this was Martin Bashir's father.
My God.
What an incredible story. He saved Martin Bashir's father's life. Mm. And that was after the Diner interview, a year or two after.
There's a lot more to come, isn't there, on this?
I think we should reserve
judgment. But what I will say is that Michael Jackson's family are now calling for an investigation because Michael Jackson, too, died not long after an interview with Martin Bashir.
Yeah, I know. Amazing.
So, in which, by the way, he was sort of confessing to some untoward relationships with children.
Yes.
How much of that was coercion?
Yeah.
And have we damned Michael Jackson unnecessarily?
Yeah. I tell you, popped up on TV this morning, as ever, Paul Burrell, you know.
Dinah, like the bad penny.
Dinah used to call me her rock, and I will never reveal my secrets of life with Dinah. Something he's been doing every day.
Well, he's been doing that for 25 years.
Yeah, exactly, every day.
So how many books has he written now?
Oh, God knows. But, you know, he's set up companies selling Diana artifacts and all sorts of things. You know, the man who would never tell my secrets about Diana. But
he's bound to have some stuff somewhere that he's waiting for, you know, the moment when he runs out of dosh and all is lost. He's bound to have something in a trunk somewhere that he's going to come out with.
Yeah. Oh, look, I've just suddenly found a collection of Diana's handbags, you know, or something that. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Just before we get off this subject, Miss Jones, to bring it very close to home to you, I know that your mum, I think, is still in touch with Terry Venables, the former England manager. I know that Terry, because you've told this before on this very podcast, as a young lad footballer, was actually housed by your parents in the days when footballers went into what we call digs and all that. And yet Terry is also a victim of Martin Bashir.
Yes, this was to do with the purchase of Spurs, wasn't it? The football club back in the 90s.
It was to do with a lot of things, including allegations about Terry's business dealings. I was at the FA at the time when Panorama put out two investigative documentaries on Terry Venables, and me and David Davis, who was head of communications, sat in the FA offices until late into the night watching this Panorama documentary, which Bashir had presented and worked on. And we spent the next 2 hours batting off all the accusations to the national newspapers as they were changing up to their third editions.
And once again, there were faked documents involved.
There were.
So, this is far bigger than we know at the moment. I know there's been mass coverage, because there would be, because it involves Diana for a start.
Yeah.
But then you've got, you know, the biggest pop star in history, Michael Jackson.
Yes.
You've also got one of the great football managers, one of our most charismatic figures in the game of football in this country.
Yes.
So what else is going to come out?
Yeah.
I feel very sorry for Terry. He's living in Spain now. Yeah. He's not as well as he could be, but yes, he's in regular touch with my mother.
Yeah.
And since my father died, he calls her every week and to make sure she's okay and everything.
Yeah.
When he was 17 years old, he was living with my mum and dad.
Yes, amazing.
And that has been close to my family for a long, long time. So I hope that this unravels and resolves to his advantage.
So do I. He came from Dartford, Terry, and he played, first of all, for Chelsea and then went to Spurs. Just on memory, I think he got 3 or 4 England caps. He won the FA Cup with Spurs in 67. So that's your uncle might have even played in that team, 67.
Not only that, I had a very serious illness when I was a child.
Yeah.
My appendix burst and I had peritonitis and I had the last rites read and all of this. And Terry,
thank God you're still with us, Miss Jones.
Thank God you're still with us.
Says indeed. A grateful nation.
Terry organised a get well card for me, which I still have, which he got all the team to sign.
Fabulous. Yeah, how nice.
That's the kind of thing he would do.
Oh, Terry was a lovely guy. Terry would help anybody, honestly. I mean that sincerely. You know, he was always looking for people to make sure they weren't suffering. He was a great boss at the FA. He looked after everybody. All his secretaries have always said ever since Terry was the best of all the managers because he had no side to him. You know what I mean? He was such a normal bloke. Okay, folks, I've got a fantastic offer for you. Yes, a really fantastic offer. And it's from Beer 52. Okay, what is Beer 52? Beer 52 is one of the most sensational beer delivery organizations in the world. It's the world's largest beer club. with 170,000 active members, okay? Get it delivered to your door. It's on your doorstep, woof, just like that. And you can enjoy such a wonderful range of wonderful beers, okay? Now, I'm going to let you listen to this for a minute. You know what that is, folks? That is me with my bottle opener, okay? And I've got a bottle in my hand, and the bottle I've got is the Ilkley Pale, okay? Because the box I've chosen at the moment is the British Ale Mixed Case. This is the Ilkley Pale, and I'm just about to open it. You might be able to hear this, folks. Oh, there you go. And there it is. That's the top falling to the floor. I'm just having a sip of this. Wow. I tell you, fantastic. And if you don't like the light beer, by the way, there's plenty of other beers you can choose, like the Saltaire Triple Chocolate, or even go Irish, O'Hara's Leanne Follain Extra Irish Stout. Whatever, it's all beautiful stuff. So let me tell you, wow, I'm just having a taste of this, this Ilkley Pale Ale. Excuse me, I'm going to have another sip. Ooh, yeah, lovely. Right, so let me just say this, folks. A free case of 8 craft beers from Beer 52. To take advantage of this fantastic opportunity, go to www.beer52.com/Porky and cover just the postage costs of £5.95. Okay. I've already told you the Beer 52, world's largest beer club, 170,000 members. And each month, members are sent a case with a different theme. You can choose your own theme, you know, maybe the Belgian beer box, which I have to say you will love. I've been to the Belgian Beer Festival a few times, so I can vouch for Belgian beers. Now, your box of beer comes with a magazine and a snack. If you don't like dark beer, choose a lighter option. You've got all the options here with Beer 52. You can pause or cancel what you're receiving and ordering from Beer 52 at any time, okay? Nobody's drawing you into any sort of a contract. So please go to www.beer52.com/porky and pay £5.95 postage to get all this right now.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Portmeister, and, of course, the new church warden of St. Bride's Fleet Street. That's how I'm going to introduce you in future, Miss Jones. Your life as the rock chick writer extraordinaire is behind you now. You are one of God's chosen people. We're all chosen people, aren't we, in God's
eyes?
We're
all chosen people. Yeah, I'll tell you something hilarious. When I first started to attend St. Bride's 30-odd years ago, all the church wardens, well, first of all, the priest was male. All the church wardens were male. Most of the PCC, parochial church council, were male. Yeah. And I caused a scandal once by, in 1999, going into a PCC meeting with my newborn third child and breastfeeding her in the meeting. This was outrageous. This was unheard of. Yeah. And of course, nowadays we have a female rector. Yeah. We have 3 out of 4 church wardens are female. Yeah. And half the PCC is female as well. So things have come a long way in 30 years.
Absolutely. The guy I used to know very well, and we used to meet in a wine bar down the bottom of St. Bride's Lane there, and it keeps changing its name. I think it was called Van der Wink or something at one time, wasn't it? Or,
don't
know. Do you know what I mean? It's right underneath the arches, so to speak, at the bottom of St. Bride's Lane.
Not the one that used to be the City Golf Club.
No. That's opposite the back of the Bell. But funny enough, if you go past the City Golf Club, which is on your left as you're going down the hill there to St. Bride's Hall, at the bottom, if you turn right under the arches, it's there, but it kept changing.
Oh, yeah, it's called the Bunch of Grapes at the moment.
Bunch of Grapes, that's it, that's the one, yeah. And I used to see Canon John Oates in there all the time. Do you remember him?
Yeah. Yeah, he was the first rector of St. Bride's when I originally came to the church.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still alive. He's in his 90s now.
Is he? Well, if you ever see him, please pass him on my best wishes.
I definitely will.
Every journalist in Fleet Street knew Canon John Oates because, as you quite rightly say, we all go to two or three memorial services a year for, you know, our friends who've... I think the average age of... I've been in the Daily Express pension fund for like ever since I worked at the Express. You know, I started the Express in 1981 or something, you know. And the reason why it's got so much money in it is because the average age of somebody dying in journalism in those days at the highest level was about 58. So they never got to pay any money out, if you see what I mean, because we're all drinking ourselves to death, you know, in the bars around Fleet Street at a relatively early age.
It shows what a stressful job it's always been.
Well, very stressful, yes. And, of course, you know, when you get a stressful job, you've got to do things to de-stress. Tell me this, Miss Jones, amongst the fabulous events you've been to during the glittering career that you've had, and I'm talking about Band-Aid and, you know, all the great festivals and overseas tours and all that, have you ever been to the Chelsea Flower Show?
I never have, and I've always wanted to go, and it's one of those things that has eluded me. Yeah. I don't know why, really, because it's relatively easy to get a ticket. Yeah. I've just never been around when it's been on. It's usually in May, isn't it?
Obviously, yeah, it's around now. That's why I'm asking. Yeah.
I think they've moved it to the autumn this year.
Yeah.
Oh, so they won't have an awful lot of flowers. They might have quite a lot of vegetables because it'd be harvest festival kind of time of year. But no, I've never been, and I'd really love to.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because Noel Gallagher was talking in a publication just yesterday about the first time he met Ringo. And Gallagher's group, Oasis, were doing a gig and all that. And they got a request, you know, would you accept a visitor to the dressing room? Who is it? Oh, it's Ringo Starr. And of course, the Gallagher brothers, you know, idolised the Beatles and said they were the biggest influence. So they said, yeah, sure. So Ringo turns up and he said, it's the only time I've ever seen a fellow musician walk into a dressing room and get a round of applause like this, you know, from all the artists who are in the dressing room. But of course, it was Sir Ringo Starr. So, you know, Noel was, you know, breathless with...
Is he a sir?
He is a sir. Sir Ringo, yeah.
Is he? I'd missed that.
No, he is. He is.
Okay.
I think it was about 18 months, 2 years ago. And, you know.
Okay. Well, that one slipped my attention.
Yeah,
very good.
Everybody.
You're on the ball, Mr. Parry.
Yes, well, thank you. But I'd been calling for it for years because I thought it was awful that the only surviving Beatle with a knighthood was Sir Paul McCartney. And for Ringo not to get one, but to have shared the equal amount of success in the Beatles was a terrible slap in the face for Ringo and endorsed, you know, this age-old and completely inaccurate idea that Ringo just sat on the drums and bashed the drums while Lennon and McCartney wrote all the brilliant songs. So I'm rather glad...
Well, you're missing the point a bit, because most of these gongs that are awarded by the Queen and the country are for services to charities. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Ringo had lived out in Los Angeles for years and years.
That's right.
So, it you know, maybe they just brought it up to date because he's one of the last two remaining Beatles. Mm. But generally, it's to do with how much charity work they do.
Yes.
So, but it is interesting because I heard him, this is Noel Gallagher, giving an interview to Claudia Winkleman on the BBC Radio 2, in which Noel was talking about Ringo coming back to this country to go to the Chelsea Flower Show.
Yes,
but of course, Ringo comes back here all the time because his children all live here.
Right.
So he doesn't just come back for the flowers.
Yeah.
He does enjoy that show, why not? But he comes into the country quite regularly. It's a bit of a myth that he only comes in to see the Chelsea Flower Show.
Well, here's
just
what,
saying.
No, that's fine. Honestly, that's a great perspective on it. But just to read you here what Noel said. Noel said he was the only man to ever walk into an Oasis dressing room and get a standing ovation. We said, what are you doing in London? And he said, well, I've come for the Chelsea Flower Show. And baffled Noel believed Ringo was pulling his leg and laughed and all that, but admitted the drummer revealed that he was obsessed with the annual event and tried to go every year. I've been to the Chelsea Flower Show, not because I'm a horticulturist or anything like that, but of course I go because you get free tickets in our business. You know, people always want to invite you. And if we had a guest on a radio show or something like that, and they had a stand at the Chelsea Flower Show, you'd always get a couple of tickets through the post. And like all sort of big events that used to be just events, it's now a massive corporate party. And I think we must have gone to 12 different bars inside the Chelsea Flower Show, which is at the Chelsea Hospital near to the London's riverbank, isn't it? You know, Thames Riverbank. And I'm not joking. You come out in a daze. There is so much free booze around. And that's true, really, of an awful lot of those sort of events that used to be pure in what they were trying to deliver, you know, like the motor show and all that kind of stuff. They're just huge corporate events now. And I have to say, I'm not objecting.
12 bars. Mm. What? You had the 12 bar blues, didn't you?
Yeah, 12 bar blues. That's right. Yeah. The other strange thing about it is, and I don't know if you've ever witnessed this, but on the last day, I think it's about 4 days, the Chelsea Flower Show, on the last day, they give away all the plants, because otherwise they would just die. And I remember once I was in a car going down the embankment, and it must have been about 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and I didn't even know the Chelsea Flower Show was on, when all of a sudden I saw hundreds of people staggering in the road carrying huge plants. You know, they carry the plant pot, and the plant itself is about 4 foot high. And they were all, you know, clearly been in the same, you know, bars and beer tents I ended up in. They're all staggering around on the roads with all these plants. It's a strange phenomenon, but people go sometimes on the last day just to take their plants home. So next time you need a plant, Miss Jones, get down to the Chelsea Flower Show.
Must have been like Day of the Triffids. Yeah, it would have been. Walking across the road, yeah.
No, it would have been. Now, tell me this, Miss Jones, or Churchwarden Jones, as I'm going to be calling you from now on. Yes. Did you... I get all, you know, a lot of us read a lot of papers. I try to get most of them I can. And recently I got a paper which had a supplement in it. It's called The Queen's Cuties. And it's a magazine specially printed, bringing joy to Her Majesty and the rest of us. All hail Charlotte, George, Louis, Archie and co. It's a magazine printed just to present pictures of all the Queen's great-grandchildren. I've got no objection to it. They're cute pictures, but does that really sell newspapers to just keep printing pictures of the Queen's grandchildren just because they're the royal grandchildren?
I really don't think so. I think neither the pull-out and keep, you know, they used to call them pull-out and keep mags, didn't they?
Yeah.
Nor the royals, frankly. I think there was a time, do you remember cover mounts, for example? They used to be big on the Mail on Sunday, where you had a CD that was recorded of, say, a bunch of Fleetwood Mac tracks.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And people used to collect those. Mm. There was a time when they did sell newspapers. People would buy that particular paper to get that CD. Sure. And the pull-out magazine was a similar thing.
Yes,
so
it was.
If you wanted a sort of commemorative thing on, I don't know, the Queen's whatever birthday, her 80th birthday or something, you could get that. I don't think people buy newspapers for pull-outs anymore.
No, they don't.
And I don't think they're that interested in her grandchildren. No,
neither do I. Neither do I. You know, my mum was like your mum, you know, very traditional and old and all that. And, you know, she was in support of the Queen and all that. But when she used to find these magazines littering up her newspapers, she just threw them away. She said, what do you think I'm going to do with that? You know, store it in my cupboard for years and years or something. And she
and then throw it away. Then you die and somebody comes along, cleans out your cupboards and chucks it all in a skip.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a very passé pastime, that one.
I agree. And I think it shows a lack of new ideas in journalism. Honestly, I do. I mean, you've seen the figures of newspaper sales. So have I. They've plummeted. Absolutely plummeted in the last decade and even more so in the last 2 or 3 years because young people simply don't buy newspapers and older people find them rather droll. I haven't seen anything new in some of the sort of tabloid newspapers that I used to work on and I've been buying all my life. I haven't seen a new idea for about 10 years, honestly.
Easily, yeah. My mum has all the newspapers still because that was part of my father's remit. So she's stuck with that. I go once a month, well, I see her every week, but once a month I will pick up all the newspapers from her house and deliver them to my elder daughter in North London, who uses them to line the rabbit cage.
Yeah, no, I that's it, isn't it? It used to be the old joke, didn't it? You know, today's news is tomorrow's fish and chip wrappers, which they can't use anymore, incidentally, because health and safety rules means that the ink might come off and get on your fish. But anyway, you know.
And that's not a euphemism, ladies and gentlemen.
No, it's not. No, we wear the inky fish. listen, just talking about royals for a minute. There has been a bit of a debate in the last sort of 2 or 3 weeks. I'm not sure where it started, where it came from. The idea of building a new royal yacht. What would you think about that?
absolute nonsense. I mean, the royals are on their way out. Why do they need a new yacht? And whatever country they're going to go and live in or retire to or bit of countryside or whatever, they perhaps could be responsible for their own rowing boats.
Yeah, you see, I think that's a little bit short-sighted, if you don't mind me saying so, Miss Jones, because I think that there's still a worldwide interest in the royal family, and I think there will be after Her Majesty passes on, God rest her soul, and
Don't say that yet. She's not dead yet.
Well, exactly what I'm saying. Let's hope that never happens. Of course, one day it will.
Well, it will.
But I think there'll be a renewed interest in you know, the royal family when William and Kate then become sort of heirs apparent, whereas they're number three in the pecking order at the moment. Charles, I'm sure you're right. You've said this before. Ain't really going to excite anybody. Camilla will be a difficult sell. But I think everybody waiting then for the, you know, the dawn of William and Kate. But the point I'm going to make is I still think there's interest around the world. And I think that can be used commercially for this country. If we had a yacht sailing around the world, which was flying the Union Jack and which was basically representing everything that's good about this country, trade opportunities, investment and all that, I do honestly think that'd be a great thing.
Don't you think the vast majority of people are past the royals now and just think they're an irrelevance?
Well, unless there's a huge scandal story, you're probably right, yes. But nevertheless, I think that in a way, it's a way of reshaping their usefulness, if you see what I mean, or reshaping the brand or reshaping the royal family to try and make them look part of a dynamic new Britain.
What I think is that they represent a Britain that no longer exists. It's suggestive of the UK in the 1950s, when the Queen first came to the throne. It was post-war. There was everything to play for. It was all exciting. Yes. Things were changing. And we're no longer in the 1950s. We don't live in that era anymore. And I think it's all a bit of a throwback. They are dinosaurs. They have no relevance in the modern world. Yeah. I'm sorry to say. I have every respect for Her Majesty the Queen. And I think we should see out the royal family to the point of her death, give her a fantastic send-off, and then say, right, turn the page and become a republic.
Yeah, you may well be right. Now, I have just recently picked up on a programme about snooker players. Would your father ever have been involved in snooker, Miss Jones?
Not as far as I know.
No.
I think he regarded snooker the way he looked at ice dancing. So Torval and Dean, you know, he used to really object to having to cover ice dancing in the Olympic Games.
Ice skating.
Because he said, that's what I mean. But it is kind of, it is dancing.
It is dancing, I
call
agree.
It ice dancing, yes.
I agree.
Because he didn't regard it as a true sport. Yeah. And I think he felt the same about darts as well.
Yeah, well, darts I've always regarded as a pub game, but I still think it's quite thrilling to watch it on TV. Barry Hearn turned it into a mass sort of popularity game because when you've got thousands of people jumping up and down, screaming and drinking beer and all that, it's a great spectacle. But no, the reason I mentioned the snooker one is because they featured on a guy called Jimmy White. And Jimmy White lives near me down in Stockbroker Belter, and I bump into him quite often. Funny enough, I walk across the Downs a lot, and I sometimes see Jimmy walking the other way. And he uses a couple of the local pubs that I've used and all that. But, you know, they say that a proficiency in snooker is a sign of a wasted youth. That was Jimmy White. Do you know the guy I'm talking about? The sort of guy with the buck teeth and the towels and black hair? I mean, he was winning tournaments at the age of 14. Talk about the original hustler is not in it. You know, he was taking money off grown men when he was 15, having to stand on a box next to the snooker table to be able to reach his balls and all that. And the balls on the table. Sorry. Yes.
I got it.
Family show. And I do think that that's an extraordinary sort of life to be born with such a skill that even when you don't apply yourself to it, because he admits that he's been an alcoholic, he's been a drug addict, he got hooked on crack cocaine, but was still winning snooker tournaments. It's almost like it's Keith Richards all over again, but on a snooker table and not with a guitar in his hand.
Well, it's George Best, isn't it? The wasting of a talent.
Well, do you know what? It's very funny you should say that, because I was going to move on to that, because funny enough, on the same channel, sports channel, George Best, the true genius, the next instalment on BT Sport film series will premiere on BT Sport at 10:45 on Wednesday. And I thought, my God, are they still making films about Georgie Best, you and I have spoken about him half a dozen times on this podcast alone, you know, but for some reason, his, you know, the attraction of people who want to know more about George Best and his ability to draw in audiences just goes on and on.
I find it curious because he's not a role model for young people or for young football fans. He's somebody who squandered his talent, who had it all going for him and who threw it all away. So he's not really a role model, is he?
No.
But there still is a level of fascination with him.
Yeah, huge level of fascination.
16 years ago he died. I find that really hard to get my head around.
I got very angry with the people I was working with, Talk Sport, because George Best had been in hospital for a while. Everybody knows the story. He had a liver transplant and he was abstemious for about 2 years after that. And then he went to Malta on holiday with his wife and he decided to try a spritzer, which is obviously half a glass of wine and half a glass of lemonade, isn't it?
Do you mean a spritzer?
A spritzer, that's what I said, didn't I?
Spritzer. I think you said spritzer, but anyway,
oh,
we
spritzer.
Let it go. Spritz, it has an R in it.
Yeah, and it's, is it wine and soda water or something like that?
Yes, it is wine and soda, although I think some people like it with tonic water and others with lemonade.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the minute he tasted that, all his alcoholic instincts kicked back in and he became a more inveterate boozer than he was before he even had his liver transplant, you know. And of course, he didn't last very long. He died after 3 or 4 years. He used to live down near me in Stockbroker Belt as well. And you would see George staggering around. I mean, literally staggering around. It was pitiful and hurtful. But anyway, so
what I thought was terrible about that, by the way, was that so many people were waiting on a list for a liver transplant. And he got a liver transplant and then he threw it away. And I think that was such a kick in the teeth for all those poor people who were waiting for one to save their lives.
Yeah, that is a very solid point of view for which I have a great deal of sympathy. On the other hand, George couldn't help himself. He didn't want to stop drinking. He didn't want to lead a sober life. He didn't have the slightest interest in doing that. And he just drunk on until the end. So literally, it was so pathetic at the end. George was ringing up Sunday newspapers and tipping them off about him being spotted in a wood with a new girl, much to the anger of his wife, Alex, and all that. And he got the tip off fee. That's, you know, you need the money and all that kind of stuff.
It's tragic, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely tragic. Nevertheless, he lives long in my memory for what he did on the football field, for the exciting lifestyle he led when he wasn't ill. He was a young man and he could take it all. But TalkSport wouldn't let me go to Belfast and take the show there on the Saturday of his funeral. And I thought that was a mad decision because he was the most famous footballer of our lifetimes, certainly of mine in this country. And I wanted to go there, A, to pay tribute to him, and B, to make it such a sensational tribute show to him. But, you know, for some reason, no, it doesn't fit our profile anymore and all that. That was a bad decision.
I agree.
Absolutely.
My mum still got in her dining room
a
huge, it takes up half the wall in the dining room, a painting of George Best on the field.
Really?
It's a staggering thing, yeah.
And who painted that? And how did she get it?
Somebody famous gave it to my dad.
Oh, I see.
I can't remember the name of the artist.
Yeah,
now.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But it's a wonderful piece and it captures him perfectly.
Yeah. You said he wasted his talent and all that. Do you know what I found out about people who are the best at their jobs? They actually don't realise how much talent they've got. The other guy who was exactly the same as George in that was Paul Gascoigne. Well, Paul Gascoigne's still with us, of course, thankfully, and you know, seen crop up on sort of talent shows and all that kind of stuff. But Paul had no conception of what a great footballer he was. The talent came to him so naturally, he just took it for granted. Seriously, just took it for granted. It's not like Lewis Hamilton, who is aware of how hard he's got to work every day to keep himself at the top. Paul wasn't interested in working. It just came so naturally to him.
I tell you, it was like that in the rock world. Do you remember Jerry Rafferty?
I do. He drank himself to death, didn't he?
Well, he did, yeah. He was a very gifted Scottish musician.
Yes, Baker Street.
Everybody wanted to work with him.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney, the Stones, everyone. He turned them all down. He was famous for a couple of tracks, wasn't he? One was Baker Street with that inimitable sax solo at the beginning.
Yeah.
And also Stuck in the Middle with You, which...
Steeler's Wheel,
yes.
Well, I'm stuck in the middle with you.
That's
bounds to the left of me,
talented.
Jokers to the right. Here I am stuck in the middle with you.
Great line, but yeah. Somebody who's also squandered his talent and couldn't really understand what he had or why people valued him.
Yeah. Paul Gascoigne, the first time he got into the England squad, and then he was still playing for Newcastle then, a Geordie boy, never hardly left Newcastle, you know, since his birth, really. So he goes down in London in the team hotel, and all of a sudden, somebody goes looking for Paul Gascoigne, and he's not in his room. And they spoke to a chambermaid or somebody. She said, "Oh, I saw a young man leave down the back stairs about 20 minutes ago. What did he look like?" "Well, I'm not sure, but he had an England tracksuit on." "Right, thank you." And Paul had gone out the hotel, down the back stairs, you know, next to the lift, the fire exit, emergency door, to meet his dad in a pub round the corner to have a few drinks with his dad and a couple of mates who'd come down from Newcastle to go to the game the following night. That's how unaware he was of himself and his talent.
Wow. Whatever happened? Do you remember the papers used to be full at one point of all the trials and tribulations of him and his wife, Cheryl?
Oh, that all ended a long time ago, honestly. And
I know it did, but whatever became of her?
Well, I haven't read anything about her for years and years. She got some sort of a settlement and she just decided she didn't want anything to do with it anymore and just got away from it, you know. And that's the way it is, I'm afraid. OK, folks, that's it for today's Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for all tuning in. And Miss Jones, you, in your new role as church warden, maybe you'd like to bless our flock before we finish this podcast, yes?
Ah, well, that isn't my remit. You'd have to speak to the rector about that, I'm afraid. I couldn't possibly. But no.
You're refusing to bless the flock.
No, I'm not ordained, so I couldn't possibly do such a thing.
Okay.
But obviously, I wish all our millions of listeners very well.
Indeed. Obviously, the one exception is ABBA. And yet, to my shame, I've suddenly discovered that when ABBA won in Brighton in whatever year it was, 1973 or something, we gave them 0 points. How could you not? How could you give Waterloo, you know, one of the great pop songs of all time, 0 points? And particularly when the group delivering it, who were unknown at the time, were so glamorous. You know, two beautiful girl singers, two wacky musicians, one on a piano, one on a guitar. I think that was a horrendous thing. I'm ashamed to be British to learn that we gave ABBA 0 points.
Well, no, you're not. Because if you watch the footage of that particular entry during that particular year, you know, Benny and Bjorn are pretty ugly. They don't look like pop stars. It wasn't
I couldn't say that about the girl singers, by the way, without getting lambasted worldwide for sexism.
Well, I'm only speaking my mind.
All of a sudden, I saw hundreds of people staggering in the road carrying huge plants. You know, they carry the plant pot and the plant itself is about 4 foot high. And they were all, you know, clearly been in the same, you know, bars and beer tents I ended up in. They're all staggering around on the roads with all these plants. It's a strange phenomenon, but people go sometimes on the last day just to take their plants home. So next time you need a plant, Miss Jones, get down to the Chelsea Flower Show.
Must have been like Day of the Triffids.
Yeah, it would have been,
walking
yeah.
across the road, yeah. yeah.
You can go down, you know, a path and hire a rowing boat and row on the river. And I've done that a number of times with young ladies who've, you know, wanted to be close to me. You know what I mean?
It always comes down to that.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.